News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Morning, y'all. It is 8:07 on FM Talk 106.5. Dan Brennan, Dalton Arwig, turning up your voice if you like, and also we'll check your questions you have on the text line at 343-0106 for our guest, Francis McGowan, who's the founder, one of the founders, and also the executive director of Service Dogs Alabama.
Yeah, and Service Dogs Alabama, soon opening an office here in our area. Francis, thank you so much for joining us, and where is this office going to be located?
It is a satellite office, and we are opening it in Fairhope, Alabama, to serve the Gulf Coast and the Bay region.
So you are already around the state of Alabama. I know one of your main training sites is right outside of Montgomery. So you open an office here to make sure that those who need service dogs are able to be paired up with one for citizens down here. Is that pretty much why you're here, fundraising and that kind of thing and awareness?
Absolutely.
So let's,
we have placed a couple of dogs in this area, but we have to raise the funds because we place dogs for free with our veterans. We raise the funds for the dogs in the areas where we place them. So we needed to open an office here to make everybody aware of our services and be able to raise funds so that we can place more dogs in this area.
You know, Francis, the when I think of service dogs, first people I think of are veterans returning home. Also, you know, epilepsy, I'm not sure if that qualifies. Tell us, who all would generally be in need of a service dog?
Well, we train service dogs for seizure alert and assistance, and so epilepsy would qualify. We train a lot of seizure alert dogs because many of the veterans coming back as well as some children, will need a seizure alert dog as well as a PTSD dog. Mm. They have multiple disorders usually. So we train diabetic alert dogs, seizure alert dogs. We train for PTSD and other anxiety issues, disabilities. And we also train for mobility with a harness and also wheelchair assistance.
So it sounds to me like you're task is to, first of all, diagnose a certain candidate for a dog, find out what their needs are, and maybe what some of their liabilities are, and match a certain dog that's got skills up with them? Is that how this works?
Well, we have our own breeding program. So we train primarily Labrador Retrievers, and they start as young as 6 weeks old into training. They go into training about 6 weeks. And then from there, they will train till they are between 2 and 3 years old full time before we will place them. So it's not a quick process. We're not a 6 month program. It's a 2 to 3 year program training program for the dog. And then once we pair a dog, once we find exactly the right match for that dog, then they will come to our training center in Hope Hall, stay with us for free. And they will train with their dog for a week before taking it home.
Oh, great. That's I've always been fascinated by the entire process there. I was wondering if a dog could maybe be, you know, nominated or come in later in life. I don't know. For instance, my 9-year-old Boston Terrier, he would not qualify to be a service dog, it doesn't sound like.
Right.
No. It sounds like it's from you start with them as puppies. The training begins immediately.
We breed them, and we breed dogs that are already service dogs that have already been proven. If we do take outside Labrador Retrievers from responsible breeders that do health testing and X-rays on their dogs before they breed, and so they can qualify for donating dogs to us, which we love taking outside dogs, but we train so many dogs. When you have 80 dogs in training at one time, you have to breed at least 5 litters a year. And then you expect to receive one more litter total, another 5 to 10 dogs from outside breeders. Because they'll usually donate 1 to 2 dogs to us for our program.
If you got a question for Frances McGowan, the founder and executive director of Service Dogs Alabama, hit us on the text line and we'll get that question to her at 343-0106.
So, Frances, you mentioned the process from very early on in the dog's life until they're finally ready to be matched with a human. And you were talking to us before we went on the air. Of course, Hope Hull, that's the main campus, right? But you even have right now in Tallahassee, Florida, at a women's prison. Is that where you have some of the puppies? And it's kind of like a program that I'm sure helps out a lot of those women who are trying to rehabilitate their life, but also get the dogs kind of off on the right track.
It does. We have 26 dogs in a prison in Tallahassee, Florida. And each dog has 2 trainers, a primary trainer and an apprentice trainer. So we are considered one of their best therapeutic programs. We've been with them for 10 years or more. So anyway, the recidivism rate for inmates who do train dogs with us is very, very low. So we have to, in order to train a service dog, we have to train our trainers how to remove themselves from emotional situations, because when you're trying to train a dog for anxiety, a person with anxiety can't actually train that dog because they flatline. The dog lives with anxiety instead of recognizes anxiety as part of his job.
So your trainers have to be very qualified as well.
Oh my goodness, yes. They stay in training. The people stay in training as well as the dogs.
Keep
in mind that a dog thinks with his nose. So everything we train turns into scent. He smells stress levels. He knows when anxiety is coming on. That's why we have to have our trainers not emotional and not anxious, because when they are anxious, that tells the dog, I need to start doing my job.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So who qualifies? Who are the candidates for these dogs? And if they feel like they're a candidate, how do they find out if they can get a dog from y'all and if you guys can work with them?
Well, now, again, I mentioned the disabilities that we serve. We also serve the school and court systems of Alabama. We have an exclusive contract with the State Department of Education to train facility intervention dogs for the school system. So what we do with those dogs, they are trained to alert to stress levels like test anxieties or people that are having disruptive behaviors in the classroom. And we have had tremendous success with this program. They provide scholarships to about 7 schools a year to receive a trained facility intervention dog from us. And these intervention dogs are trained well, just like service dogs are. They stay in training for 2 to 3 years before their placement. So we train for school systems. We train for courtroom work. We also train for multiple disabilities. Our website is servicedogsalabama.org. And so if you go to our website, you can find our applications. You can find stories about our dogs, what type of dogs we train, what they do, and how you can get in touch with us if you have more questions.
That's outstanding, Frances. Tell me a little bit about the main campus there in Hope Hull. I'm seeing 43 acres. I'm almost picturing like a training course for basic training, like with these dogs out there. What are some of the things that trainers, some of the cool things that trainers do with them out there at that Hope Hull campus?
Well, boot camp is about right. That's right for our campus, and it's right for the prison where we train, too.
Mm-hmm.
We have about almost a mile-long walking trail for the dogs. We also have an air-conditioned and heated kennels, air-conditioned and heated huge open training buildings for the dogs as well. And they also leave the campus to go out and train in public. So since they're training in the prisons when they're younger, when they're puppies till about 6 months old. At 6 months, they'll come back to our campus. They'll start being introduced into public. and then they will go back to the prison after about 3 months, and they will finish their task training, specific task training. And so, and then they will come back to our campus again, be socialized out in public again, and if they're ready, they go into finishing training. They're identified as completing the course, passing public access tests for certification and task training, and they go to finishing trainers who know how to do all the tasks, and they do them in public. We introduce them to airports and restaurants and schools and colleges and wherever the person, that wherever that dog is going, his environment, we know what it is, and we try to put him in that environment on a consistent basis before we place him with a person in that environment.
What a process.
Yeah, so cool to hear that. And we know you guys do great work. This helps veterans so much, also people with disabilities. I did not know Service Dogs Alabama, the oldest and largest nonprofit in Alabama. I would have failed that trivia question. So you guys are the oldest nonprofit in the state.
Well, no, we're the oldest and largest service dog organization.
Okay, I got you.
That serves children and veterans and school systems in Alabama. So we're about 11 years old or 12 years old now.
Quick question for you. I'm sorry, Dalton.
No.
But emotional support animal and service animal, is there a difference?
There is a big difference between an emotional support animal, a service animal, and a therapy dog, for instance.
Okay.
Therapy dog is owned by a person that's actually their pet that has some basic training to go into hospitals and nursing homes and visit with them, visit people who need to see the dog. It's fabulous programs or therapy dog programs. They do not have public access, and they do not have task training like a service dog. The emotional support dog, again, may or may not really have task because they are at for home use only. They are not certified in public access.
Well,
if you've read the newest laws, like, for instance, the newest laws for airlines, they no longer allow emotional support dogs or emotional support animals on the airplane. Emotional support animals, by law, do not have public access except for living in situations or living in housing that would not normally allow dogs. They get a free pass to that.
Well, Francis, I certainly learned a lot today.
Me too.
Excited you guys are bringing an office down to Fairhope. ServiceDogsAlabama.org is the website. And thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you for having me this morning.
Delightful lady right there. And she's new to the area and loves Fairhope, loves Mobile.
Loves helping people.
Loves helping people. Amen. 19 minutes after 8 o'clock, FM Talk 106.5, Dan Brennan, Dalton Orwig. And open up those phone lines, 343-0106. Shows Mobile Mornings on FM Talk 106.5, 725, Dan Brennan and Dalton Orwig on your Friday. With a great weekend weather scale from Dr. Bill.
Oh, yeah, 1.9720.
Give me more of that.
Johnny, our big winner today.
Yeah, huge winner.
I was going to mention to Francis, service dogs have to be digging this weather right now, right?
Everybody digging the weather, yeah. There's humans whose tails are wagging. Ted Cruz had a little bit to say about the mask mandate being lifted if you are vaccinated.
Yes.
By Rochelle Walensky yesterday. Here's Ted Cruz.
Joe Biden and Kamala Harris have been playing politics with COVID-19, and they've been playing politics by keeping schools shut down. The science is absolutely clear. Kids should be in school in person today. The science is unequivocal on that.
By the way, did you see San Francisco schools are opening for one day, the very last day of the school year, and it won't be a teaching day, it'll be a supervision day, so that they will be eligible for $12 million from the, I don't know if it's state money or federal money, but they're gaming the system, the San Francisco school system, speaking of what Cruz had to say there about schools not being open.
Blatantly.
Blatantly.
Wow.
Yeah.
Here's Cruz on masks, by the way, who says what maybe a lot of you have been saying, like, about time.
But they also were playing politics on masks, that it never made any sense once you were vaccinated to wear a mask. And unfortunately, Biden and Harris and the administration kept saying, wear a mask, wear a mask, wear a mask. Even if you're vaccinated, that discouraged a lot of people from getting the vaccine. So I think the message people ought to hear is get the vaccine, stop the spread of the disease. It ought to be voluntary, but you should be encouraged to get the vaccine. And one of the great virtues, when you get the vaccine, you can take the damn mask off and return to regular life. That should encourage millions more people to choose to get the vaccine.
President Biden calling from a phone booth. You heard that in the background right there. That's Ted Cruz talking about the masks yesterday.
Hey, Ted, language.
Kids are listening.
He's been turning it up here a lot recently. Yeah, and the big question now is, well, first off, they're basically saying there by the CDC saying, hey, if you've been vaccinated, you can take the masks off. You can stop social distancing. They are basically saying, pandemic getting over, but our response to it as far as what would be required of citizens is over, because they're not going to be, I would hope, questioning people on the streets that aren't wearing masks, saying, have you been vaccinated? You know, unless like it becomes required to have a vaccine passport on you, which I believe would be one of the silliest moves ever, because there would be severe pushback on that.
No, no doubt.
Required to carry a card on you of some sort, maybe even a digital passport.
It's the honor system at this point.
But certain organizations, businesses could be allowed to do that. Even as the carnival sensation comes in to Mobile right now, and I hear Leanna said the mayor is doing a Facebook Live. Seems like everybody's very excited about the sensation coming to town, but they're coming to get their employees on the ship vaccinated. The cruise industry, for instance, could require that you be vaccinated to get on a ship. Colleges, I read that I think 300 colleges, let me make sure that I didn't dream this headline that I read last night, but I think 300 colleges so far have already said, yeah, more than 300 universities across the United States are requiring students to receive the COVID vaccine. Now, I have a 2-year-old, I have a 4-month-old, and with the 4-month-old, we're in the process where we're taking her to the doctor every month and then every 2 months, and then on her year, we'll take her there. For vaccines, mainly, because there are certain vaccines that are required to go to daycare in Alabama. Will COVID be added to that list, and how long would it be? Somebody brought up a great point on the text line earlier. Mark said, I think that any school or business that requires you to get a COVID vaccine should have to sign a form making them liable for any harm the vaccine may cause. The reason is, right now, this vaccine has only been approved for emergency use, and that's what a lot of parents are worried about.
I've seen that argument a number of times about, wait a minute now.
Yeah.
Unlike the other vaccines, this one has been rushed into use.
Like I told you, if they said that the vaccines are now eligible for everybody, 1 month up, you can get the vaccine, I would personally be very, very hesitant to give either of my daughters that.
But understood.
Maybe 12 years old is a bit different. I don't know. I don't
understand.
Have a 12-year-old.
Yeah, and the text line's going either way with that. Get the vaccine, trust the science, and others are saying, heck no. It's 8:30, FM Talk 106.5. Dan Brennan, Dalton Norwig, Mobile Mornings.
8:35, FM Talk 106.5, Mobile Mornings. Dan Brennan, Dalton Norwig here with you to wrap up the work week. Coming up, we'll get to the phones. First, though, let's head over to McConnell Automotive and talk with Louis Arata. Hey, Louis.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Couldn't be a much better day for the weather, at the very least, and it's going to look like this through the weekend, so why not get on over to McConnell right now?
That's right. We got our fingers crossed for next weekend, too. You know, we're going to show everybody those new GMC Sierras pulling those floats, and we're going to have a fun time next Friday night downtown. I hope everybody comes down and supports the city of Mobile with that. We got great deals going on. Everybody needs to check out the internet, McConnellAutomotive.com, the website, I should say. And if you got any questions on that stuff, give us a call, 251-476-4141. We've got some great deals on the internet on used, and we've got plenty of trucks, plenty of Yukons, plenty of Tahoes, plenty of Suburbans, Yukon XLs, just about everything you want to see. Most all of them are certified, and we'll give you a heck of a deal. We're going to be there all day long today and Saturday, and we're going to have fun selling a few cars.
You could say that again, Louis. We appreciate it and hope to see you this weekend.
Thank you.
That's Louis Ratta. You'll find him at McConnell Automotive, Dolphin Street, just east of I-65, and online, McConnellAutomotive.com. He reminded me there, just a week away from that Mardi Gras style parade that's on the way here, and that'll be next Friday night, and then I guess the official commissioning of USS Mobile will be the following day, even though they were kind of...
On Saturday, it's going to be streamed live. It's going to be a limited amount of people. I've been to one of those, which is really cool. Yeah, really, really cool.
Was that the USS Dan Brennan?
That was... you know, that's like a boat in a tub somewhere. No, it was not that, but I forget what it was. But in any event, named after his state, I believe, and we had that about a year and a half back. Uh-huh. And also, great to be at something like that.
The USS Mobile will end up in San Diego.
Yep,
is where they're planning to finish that one.
Okay, more talk about. Let's see where we're going here. This I know we're going to mention de Blasio, right?
Yeah. So, okay. You know, de Blasio, who I just absolutely love ripping on any chance I get to because he does some ridiculous stuff.
Yeah, we'll get to him. We got that and also Lindsey Graham and his response to the Biden administration on the pipeline.
Mm.
Right now, Tracy's on the line with us this morning. Tracy, good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm great. Don't be offended if I call you guys D squared.
Okay, not offended. Honored.
Okay, great. Okay, so here's my comment about the latest CDC mandate is how is it they can say, okay, if you've had a vaccine, then you get to move about freely, but if you haven't had a vaccine, you can't.
It's
I got one more thing.
Go ahead. Bring it.
Okay. So how does anybody know if you've had a vaccine or not? Are they going to finally start saying, show me your papers?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the worry for a lot of people. You know, right now, I don't think they can tell who's vaccinated or not vaccinated. They do give everyone those cards. And, Tracy, I was saying the same thing as you and have been saying. Who gave the CDC all of these, you know...
Power.
All that power. But, you know, you kind of sit back and think about it. What the CDC is really doing is giving cover to the big businesses that currently are requiring masks.
Big cover to the government.
That too.
And I'm very sorry to say this, but I totally agree with a whole bunch of stuff that Ricky says. And I'm just going to leave it at that. Yeah. And thank you for taking my call.
Well, you
have a great weekend.
You got it. Thanks for calling, Tracy. Tracy or any of you can review that with the Ricky Quickie that is online on our Facebook page. So Ricky called. Well, here's what happened. Ricky texts us often, and he... You know, he's got a lot to say on the text line. Sometimes his texts are angrier than other times. Sometimes he's
wishing for our painful deaths. Yes.
Other times he's wishing us hello. So you never, it's kind of a mixed bag. But the point is that reading the text, we were like, Ricky needs to get on the air and let some of this out because he's going to blow a gasket.
Yeah.
So that it was in the interest of physical and mental health that we allowed Ricky on the air yesterday. He said what he said. We gave him like 12 minutes, right?
Yeah.
So check out the Ricky Quickie online on our Facebook page.
Let me make it clear where I stand. I disagree with probably 95% of what Ricky believes. Just start by saying that. I'm half vaxxed right now. Probably pick one of those up at Starbucks, I'm sure. I think we should start grading people on the Ricky scale instead of the Richter scale.
Yes, if you're closer to what Ricky thinks.
After Ricky got on the air, we let him loose yesterday. I got quite a few tweets, quite a few texts of people saying, is it weird that I...
kind of agree?
I'm kind of agreeing with some of what Ricky said. I think a lot of people feel the anger that Ricky is directing at, well... us in so many instances.
I would agree with
that. He's directing at
the
federal government and a lot of the mass media, which I think he thinks that we are. We're not. Listen, Ricky thinks we're being paid by people. That's the only person that's paying me is the owner of this business, and I probably don't even deserve that. But
Lester Holt and me and Dalton, not all part of the same country club, by the way.
we're
not golf buddies.
But I think some of what Ricky says does people identify with that. And what I think is the biggest problem is that people trying to shut down the beliefs of others. I think that if you want to, you know, rebut some of the ridiculous things that people believe, then you're free to do that. Just come up with some good facts and make it factual and have people decide. But some of the stuff like the putting magnets on your arm and to prove that you've been microchipped, sometimes it just comes down to common sense, right? Why would the government put a microchip in your arm when we're already walking around with microchips on us constantly?
Yeah, pretty much.
Those being the smartphones.
Yes.
They know exactly where you are. If they needed to, no one cares where I am. But if they did, they could find it pretty easily using whatever this Apple iPhone technology is. And they know what you're buying. You know, that's what all of this – that's how Facebook is so big. That's how Amazon – all these companies have grown into – these behemoths, because they are using data, selling that data, just in general, that's what's making, you know, the big money now is people knowing what you're most likely to buy, who you're most likely to vote for, just using this mass amount of data that they get from people, and it all comes from your smartphone that you're holding right there, and they don't need to microchip your arm. So that's common sense debunking number one.
So I thought the only reason Facebook was big was because of all those duck face selfies that are taken on the beach. and they're so popular, and ladies like to do that, and I thought that was really the engine that drove Facebook.
Well, duck faces started Facebook. Now it's just, you know, massive overreach by the company. We can debunk something else, too. Why would they want to kill off everybody with the vaccine? Right?
Yeah, I don't see that. Where's...
Why would you kill off your customer base?
Right.
I can understand if you wanted to come up with the theory, and this could be, and I'm sure some people have this conspiracy theory, that maybe the virus was planted so that it would result in this massive amount of government overreach and this new medicine that everybody needs. If you're going to have to get vaccinated to go into whatever business, you know, see, that's a conspiracy theory that you have to at least think about, right?
Sure.
But to say that they just want to kill everyone off makes absolutely zero sense. So just use a little bit, what I'm saying is use a little bit of common sense when you're thinking about some of this stuff.
Yeah, this year has been, it's just sucked the whole thing. It's been sucked the life out of us.
Uh-huh.
It stripped us of our lives in a lot of ways. And so, you know, if there's some big entity out there that's getting a charge out of all this, I don't know. I don't know that I would subscribe to that. And again, what is the power? Okay, I get it. You know, they want the power. But at some point, I just don't see the means and the ends coming together on this thing.
Right, but, you know, never let a good crisis go to waste.
No, true.
And we've seen, because of the pandemic, more social welfare spending than we have seen ever.
A lot of that was under Trump.
You're right.
I mean, he doled out a lot of money.
But Biden is certainly not wasting his time in spending that money either.
Not hitting the brakes.
Speaking of somebody who loves all of this massive government overreach, Mayor Bill de Blasio, socialist mayor of New York City, who, remember, he tells people they can't go to parks, and then he's found walking around in a park. Basically, everything he said you can't do, you could find Bill de Blasio doing during the course of the pandemic.
Look, he lost me 5 years ago when he was eating his pizza with a knife and fork.
Well, what about when he dropped that groundhog to its death on Groundhog Day? You'd think that would have been enough. But
oopsie daisy.
We've talked about some of the incentives for getting vaccinated. You know, Ohio, you'll be entered into a lottery for $1 million.
Yep.
Well, in New York City, you get free Shake Shack fries if you get vaccinated. So de Blasio was disgustingly eating a bag of fries and a burger yesterday at his press conference.
Okay.
And it was there that he said, and it's actually surprising he admitted to this, that as businesses in New York are trying to reopen, part of the reason they're having trouble finding employees is because of the massive amounts of money that are going to people that are unemployed or have been left unemployed. You know, a city like New York or some of the larger liberal cities on the West Coast are getting more money from the Biden administration because they shut down their businesses so much longer than everyone else. So de Blasio yesterday said, I think what you're going to see is more and more people taking jobs because the unemployment is going to run out soon. So the left that refuses to admit that paying out all this money to people to not work is not a reason why they aren't going to work, de Blasio in a roundabout way admits to it.
So doesn't it feel like a little bit like de Blasio and or Walensky are like 2 or 3 months behind our way of thinking on a lot of this?
I would agree.
A lot of our listeners.
New York City is finally entering the portion where Alabama was a year ago.
Crazy. 847. Lost a guy on the line there. Give a call back. We'll talk to you in the final segment. It's 8:47 with Dan Brennan, Dalton Orwig. The show is Mobile Mornings on FM Talk 106.5. We'll let you know who and what Jeff Poore's got on the way coming up. FM Talk 106.5, Dan Brennan, Dalton Orwig. Have you got Jeff's list here handy?
Do I?
Hate to put you on the spot, but you usually have it over there.
I have it ready. Coming up first hour, you might have heard his name. May have even voted for him last year, U.S. Senator Tommy Tuberville.
Maybe you went to the games and rooted for his team back in the day.
Maybe you even rooted against his team.
Maybe.
I hear some people in the state did not like Tommy Tuberville back in the day. Coming up second hour, April Marie Fogle with Alabama Today. And then the third hour, we were just talking about employment and unemployment money. Alabama Secretary of Labor Fitzgerald Washington joins the Jeff Poore Show. And then State Senator Chris Elliott, what is it Jeff calls him, the returning champion. He'll be on in the third hour of the Jeff Poore Show coming up, so you do not want to miss that. I've got a couple interesting stories here, Dan, that I wanted to run past you.
Sure.
First off, Laverne Cox, transgender from right here in Mobile, Alabama. I think probably the most famous transgender actress in at least in the United States,
okay,
or at least that we know of. Mm-hmm. There might be some candidates.
What's her claim to fame?
I think Orange is the New Black was probably where Laverne Cox became most famous.
Okay,
and then has been in several things since then. But a new movie out with Laverne Cox, and the name of this movie is Promising Young Woman. And what happened here is this movie was being released internationally, like so many other movies, like most other movies, and when they do that, they have to dub voices over for non-English speaking countries, like Italy, where they were dubbing the voice of Laverne Cox for this new film, and now this company is in huge trouble.
What'd they do?
With SJWs, Social Justice Warriors, because they use the voice of a male actor to dub over the voice of Laverne Cox, a 48-year-old transgender woman. They used the voice of a 59-year-old man named Roberto Pettacini. And now they're in trouble because, well, they decided to use a male for the voice.
So would they prefer that it was a female? look, it's Italian music. So would they prefer it was a female, or would they prefer that they found two more questions.
Yes.
Would they prefer that it was a transgender,
mm-hmm,
or would they prefer, going a step further, that it was a
African-American transgender that speaks Italian.
From Mobile. That's fluent in Italian.
If you fit all those boxes and then auditioned and didn't make it, oh boy, that's tough.
That's racism.
So I think probably just like anything, people are upset and some people would probably prefer that it was even just a female that did the voice of Laverne Cox. I was trying to grab audio of what Laverne Cox actually sounds like.
Right.
While we're talking about common sense, you know, you probably would want the dubbed voice to sound as close to the voice of the person as possible.
I would see that, yeah.
Laverne Cox does have a bit of baritone to her voice. They haven't been able to completely, you know, fix everything there. And the studio has now apologized. They said, "We are deeply grateful to Laverne and the transgender community for opening our eyes to a bias that neither we," same old, copy and paste your apology, "the bias that neither we nor many in our industry had recognized. While there was no malicious intent, we're working diligently to fix this."
Hannah, do me a favor, print that out and zip it over to me, because I know at some point
in
the course of my new talk radio career, I'll have to get up in front of people and pour my heart out in that way.
The company apologized for the pain caused. How much pain was caused? Who's even going to watch the movie, the Italian version of this movie, Promising Young Woman? It's just hilarious. And actually, you know, by making that mistake, and then, or if you want to call it a mistake, by jumping into that social media pen that they jumped into on accident, they ended up doing probably more press for the movie than they could have ever dreamed, because I had never heard of this movie.
Me neither.
But there you go. Now, not only do you have to cast, if you're doing like a movie about Egypt, which in some instances I agree with, that you don't always need to put white males in all of the characters. For if you're doing like a, what was that movie that came out about Egypt a while back that had Gerard Butler and a bunch of other, you know, white people in the cast? I can understand where you say, hey, listen, there's plenty of decent Egyptian actors out there that could probably play the role of an Egyptian. You don't have to get a white guy to do everything. I can at least understand and see the argument.
Right.
For this, when you're just dubbing over a film, it makes absolutely no sense.
It sounds like there were... And to apologize... What was the quote again? We apologize?
For the pain caused. So it was somebody like... doubled over, just so upset that they used this 59-year-old Italian male's voice. I have no idea.
So they that was number 17 on how to wake yourself up in the middle of the day. Slap yourself in the face.
I must apologize. Have put you to sleep there.
Well, we apologize for any pain that we caused right there. All right, so that's item number one. Can we sneak one more in here
Before
we're done?
So I've always wondered how this doesn't happen more often, even back when I was on the track and field team at Clark Prep. For a year. I threw the, I can't even, what's the ball called? The really heavy ball?
Y'all, Dalton was on the real heavy ball team. It's a shot put, Dalton.
Yeah, I was not good at shot put. Well,
you can't even identify it in a lineup.
I was on the team to travel with the running chicks in school. That's why I was there. But I would watch the javelin throwing and say, hey, how come nobody's been hit by a javelin yet? Well, we're a bunch of AISA students. We're terrible at these sports. Well, in New Jersey, that actually happened here recently. Toms River High School, a 16-year-old was struck by a javelin in the right thigh in a meet the other day. No visible bleeding. So I don't know if they wrapped the tourniquet above the javelin and then, like in a movie, you know, cut it off there, left it impaled in the leg. The teenager's all right, but the firefighters had to cut the javelin out and take this student to the hospital.
Are you kidding me?
Not kidding at all. There you go. It actually does happen. People get struck by javelins.
Let me look at this.
Shot put. Just came to me.
I'm looking at the scorecard of that meet, by the way. The guy that threw the javelin... dead last. So he was punished for his poor throw. He was just like off to the right or the left. You figure if he hit somebody, he's going to throw his son. All righty. FM Talk 106.5, Dan Brennan and Dalton Orwig and Jeff Poor is next.